from the Atlantic to the Pacific, across the islands of the Caribbean, from mountain crest to mountain crest, from canyons to the clouds and into the cosmos, we're pumping What a Giant Load, plus streaming worldwide on the internet and keeping you company tonight. It's the place to relax and hang out. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and this is Speaking of Strange, giving you the latest and discussing the weirdest. We have assembled the finest team of reporters and the most intriguing guests, and that's why we are your favorite hub in a wild world, so keep it tuned right here. Well, I think this hour of the show is something that everybody really needs to listen to as we all kick off a new year together, because we're going to talk about one of my favorite topics, amazing coincidences. You might consider them synchronicities, and a little later I'll get into exactly what that means and how that is defined. But first off, I want to start by giving you a couple of stories related to my own life, since I know them to be true. Let me start by saying that when I was 18 years old, fresh out of high school, I was contacted by executives at the Grove Park Inn who hired me to be the first person ever to do a formal investigation of their pink lady ghost. Now, of course, Grove Park these days is owned by a whole new corporation. There's a whole new set of people who are in charge of things. But when I was hired there, it was a really pivotal moment in the history of the Grove Park Inn, because since the hotel was created, and if you're not from Asheville, I guess I should say Grove Park is the big, venerable, old resort in Asheville. It's where the president stays when he comes into town. Grove Park was built in 1913. Stories about the Pink Lady, the ghost of this woman who died sometime in the 19-teens or early 20s, it had become a topic that you did not usually discuss. I mean, in fact, employees were told, you don't talk about this, you'll scare away guests. And so it was a big deal for them to finally loosen up and open up a bit. And this was around 1995, and invite a person like me to come in, do research. And the idea was that if I found enough credible evidence, then they would finally acknowledge this and do sort of a media event and take advantage of how people are fascinated with ghosts, but especially the Pink Lady. And they also gave me permission to feature this story in my book, Haunted Asheville, which came out in 96 and to this day is the top regional best-selling nonfiction book there in Asheville. So while I was doing my research on the Pink Lady, you know, I was trying to figure out, like, what are the hot spots for people seeing this ghost? And there was no particular room that anybody associated with the Pink Lady at that time. And I was the first person who took a lot of these reports and realized they seemed to cluster around room 545. And so I eventually said, I think room 545 is where she must have been staying the night she died. We still don't know how she died, if it was a suicide or a murder or an accident. And now if you go to Grove Park and you say, hey, what's the haunted room? Everybody will say, oh, 545. You know, it is now firmly solidified as a part of local urban legend and urban myth. Everybody knows 545 is the haunted room of the Grove Park Inn. Well, that said, when I was doing my research there, I was also working with my good friend Mark Ellis Bennett. And Mark Bennett at that time was also working at the Grove Park Inn as a restoration artist. And Mark had a really interesting experience while he was restoring the area of the hotel called the Palm Court, which is right in the main inn, the oldest section of guest rooms, and that's where the Pink Lady apparently died, and that's where room 545 is located. Well, at one point when Mark was working in the hotel, he went into a maintenance room, and he found an old kind of rusty key on a shelf. And he said to his supervisor, is this one of the old Grove Park Inn keys? And the supervisor said, yes. And Mark said, well, may I keep this as a souvenir since I'm doing all this work, you know, re-stenciling the interior of the palm court? And the supervisor said, oh, no, absolutely not. Says that is the only Grove Park Inn room key known to exist. All the rest are lost. And of course, Mark's thinking, and it's sitting in this maintenance room, you know. So anyway, it was made clear to him that he was not going to be able to have this key. Well, Mark is a guy who has a lot of synchronicity in his life anyway. And so literally like 2 or 3 days after that, Mark was at a local flea market. He saw a guy sitting there selling a bucket of keys, 10 cents a piece. And Mark thought they looked familiar, and he said to the man, where did these come from? And the guy says, oh, these are old Grove Park Inn room keys. So Mark bought all of them. There were probably about 20 there. It was this huge find when it comes to local history. And he took all these keys. He lined them up on a beautiful plaque, which you can now see mounted overhead in the palm court, along with a sign there thanking Mark. And then Mark, of course, just kept one for himself, which is all he had ever really wanted to put on his key ring as a souvenir. Now, that is interesting enough on its own. But the story doesn't end there. Because now we fast forward 20 years into the future, just a couple years ago, my sister Jessica, who is 6 years younger than me, is an expert at buying merchandise at thrift shops and that sort of thing, and picking out things that are valuable and reselling them on eBay and whatnot and Etsy. And Jessica was walking through a flea market in Asheville, and she looks over on a table and she sees a key, a single key there, which she instantly recognized as being an old Grove Park Inn room key because she had seen the ones that Mark had gotten 20 years before. And she thought to herself, wouldn't it be cool if that were the key to room 545? And she picked it up and turned it over, and guess what? The key had imprinted on it, 545. So my sister gave me this key as a gift. It blew my mind that I now am the owner of the Grove Park Inn room key to 545, the haunted room, the room that I designated the most haunted room. And if you consider the chances that that key would be out there, and that of all people, my sister would find it and give it to me, the odds seem pretty astronomical. And it makes you wonder if somehow these possessions have a spirit and they sort of find their way to where they're supposed to be. And for now, I guess that key, It made its way to me, okay? So that is one story I can tell you related to my own life that I think is pretty extraordinary. Here's a second one. Last year, my grandfather passed away. This was my father's father, and his name was Frank Warren. Now, when I was 21 years old, I was hired to host a ghost tour for a busload of retirees at UNCA. And it was just, I think, the day before Halloween. And so I got onto the bus, and I saw this ocean of white and silver hair in front of me, because, again, they're all retirees, older folks. And in the back, I noticed there were two young ladies who looked to be out of place because they were so young compared to everybody else. And so as the day went on, I started talking to them, and it turns out that one of those ladies was named Lauren, and that ended up being my wife, Lauren Warren, whom I have now been with for about 20 years. The reason that Lauren had come to Asheville, because she's from Texas. The reason Lauren had come to Asheville was to visit her mother. Her mother, who was also from Texas, had come to Asheville because she was dating a man here at the time, and that man's name was Frank Warren, the same name as my grandfather. So it was because Lauren's mom was dating a man named Frank Warren that Lauren came here and I met her, which obviously changed my entire life. Now, it turns out that Lauren's mother did not end up marrying this man, Frank Warren. In fact, she's now married to a man in Texas named Del Bush. But that's probably a good thing on a number of counts, because if Lauren's mother had married Frank Warren, whom I'm not related to, then that means my grandfather would be named Frank Warren, and my father-in-law would be named Frank Warren, with no relation on betwixt the two, and that would be a nightmare for genealogists who would be scratching their heads till kingdom come to figure that one out. And these are just a couple of these weird, synchronistic, coincidental, quote-unquote coincidental things that have happened in my own life. All of you listening, if you think long enough, you probably have had similar things happen in your own life. And I'm fascinated by all this because, as I mentioned earlier in the show, it doesn't matter if you believe in God or not, or if you believe in the paranormal, or you believe in destiny. None of that matters. You can't deny the fact that sometimes absolutely incredible things happen that bring variables together in your life that seem to clearly suggest there is some kind of structure or organization here to life, however you want to explain that. And it can be inspirational, because I think that if you are very aware and you see these connections come together and you follow them, they will lead you to other connections, and then you finally end up on what I might consider the right track, okay, wherever you're supposed to be and whatever you're supposed to be doing. Other people might consider it very eerie, because it might indicate that sometimes you're just doomed and there's nothing you can do about it. Well, we're going to take a break. When we come back, I have a list of just amazing coincidences throughout history that I want to share with you as we explore this more. And we're also going to talk a little bit about how you even define these things, coincidences, synchronicities. And as you kick off your new year here, maybe you should bear this in mind. Because if you're like me and you find inspiration in this, then it might help you to realize no matter how rocky or chaotic your life may sometimes seem, there is a way for you to get on the right track if you accept there is a plan. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange. Do you think you can tell? Yeah, welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. The number to Wright's Coin Shop is 828-298-5402, 828-298-5402. And if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you will find a link to Wright's Coin Shop, as well as the Haunted Asheville Ghost Tours. And you'll also find a link to the Wishing Machine. And, you know, if you go to the Wishing Machine website, you can click a page that gives you testimonials from people all over the world who have used the machine. And I'm going to mention some of these testimonials as the show goes on tonight. But one that I really like just came in days ago. A guy says, I got the Wishing Machine and I wished for $5,000. And then he said, I got $9,000. That's true. And I get these kinds of emails every single day. So I implore you to go read some of the testimonials at wishingmachineproject.com. We're talking about amazing coincidences and synchronicities. If you go to Wikipedia, it says a coincidence is a remarkable concurrence of events or circumstances which have no apparent causal connection with each other. The perception of remarkable coincidences may lead to supernatural, occult, or paranormal claims. And then we look at synchronicity, which is a form of interpreting coincidence. And it says here, synchronicity is a concept first explained by psychiatrist Carl Jung, which holds that events are, quote, meaningful coincidences, end quote, if they occur with no causal relationship, yet seem to be meaningfully related. During his career, Jung furnished several slightly different definitions of it, and he variously defined synchronicity as, quote, an a causal connecting or togetherness principle, and, end quote, says he introduced that concept as early as the 1920s, but gave a full statement of it in 1951. Let's look back at some of these things that have happened historically that are truly amazing coincidences, and you can ask yourself what you think these may tell us about the way the universe and reality is organized or structured. Here's one of my favorites. This is about a king who was born in 1844. He was the king of Italy, and his name was King Umberto. And he went to a small restaurant for dinner. And the owner came out, of course, to personally take King Umberto's order. The king noticed that he and the restaurant owner were virtual doubles. They looked the same in face and in build. And so both men began discussing the striking resemblances between each other. And the more they discussed, the more they found other similarities. For example, both men were born on the same day of the same year. They were both born on March the 14th of 1844. Both men had been born in the same town. Both men married a woman with the same name, Margarita. The restaurateur opened his restaurant on the same day that King Umberto was crowned the King of Italy. And on the 29th of July in the year 1900, King Umberto was informed that the restaurateur had died that day in a mysterious shooting accident. And as the king expressed his regret, he was then assassinated by an anarchist in the crowd. Pretty amazing. That's one of
many. That's some coincidence right there.
Yeah. King Umberto.
Well, I thought you were going to say like they were twins.
I did too.
And then with DNA testing, they found out they were twins.
Well, you know, Sam, it's interesting that you bring that up because here is a twin story. In 2002, 70-year-old twin brothers died within hours of one another after completely separate accidents on the same road in Finland. The first of the twins died when he was hit by a large truck while riding his bike. And he died just 1.5 kilometers from the spot where his brother was killed. Quote, "This is simply a historic coincidence. Although the road is a busy one, and accidents don't occur every day," end quote. That's from a police officer. It says, quote, "It made my hair stand on end when I heard the two were brothers and identical twins at that. It came to mind that perhaps someone from upstairs had a say in this," end quote. There's another story that I think, well, here's another twin story. Listen to this one. Two twin brothers, Jim Lewis and Jim Springer, were separated at birth. Okay, so imagine this. They're twins, but separated at birth and adopted by different families. So they were unknown to each other. But that didn't matter, because even unknown to each other, both families named the boys James. Now, both James grew up not knowing of the other. Yet, both of them sought law enforcement training. Both had abilities in mechanical drawing and carpentry. And each had married a woman named Linda. Both of them had sons. One son was named James Allen, A-L-A-N, and the other was named James Allen, A-L-L-A-N. The twin brothers also divorced their wives and married other women, both named Betty, and they both owned dogs, which they named Toy.
Now, how did they find all this out?
Well, they met up later in life, and that's when they realized it. Yeah. I'm not sure how they found each other. How about this one? Here's a story of a falling baby. In 1930s Detroit, a man named Joseph Figlock was to become an amazing figure in a young and apparently incredibly careless mother's life. This guy, Joseph Figlock, was walking down the street, and the mother's baby fell from a high window onto Figlock. The baby's fall was broken, and Figlock and the baby were unharmed. Well, one year later, Figlock's walking down the street. Guess what happened? The same baby fell from the same window again, falling on to Mr. Figlock as he was passing beneath, and once again, both of them survived the event.
Now, is that coincidence or somebody shoving that baby onto James Figlock?
Very good point. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to read even more of these bizarre coincidences to you. And you know, you have to come up with your own, I guess, interpretation of these. Do you think that this is something that, well, just randomly happened to work out this way? Or is there some meaning, some structure, some organization in the universe, however it got there, and this is proof of it, and it means that to acknowledge it, maybe you can use it in your own life to improve things. I'm Joshua P. Warren. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Ground control to Major Tom. Ground control to Major Tom. Take your protein pills and put your helmet on. Ground control to Major Tom. Commencing countdown, engines on. Check ignition and may God's love be with you. This is ground control to Major Tom. You've really made the grade, and the papers want to know whose shirt you wear. Now it's time to leave the capsule if you dare. This is Major Tom to ground control. Stepping through the door, and I'm floating in a most peculiar way, and the stars look very different today. For here am I sitting in a tin.
Welcome back to Speaking of Strange. I'm your host, Joshua P. Warren, and we're happy that you're spending your evening with us tonight. Tonight's program is brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. The number to Wright's Coin Shop in Asheville is 828-298-5402. And, you know, if you're lucky enough to be in Asheville, drop by and visit them. But you can call from anywhere in the country and just have a chat if you're interested in gold, silver, whatever. 828-298-5402. I also want to remind all of you that if you go to speakingofstrange.com, you'll not only find a link to Wright's, but a link to the Sunshine Simple solar generator for the home, created by me and my team. And it is the world's most powerful solar generator for the price, guaranteed. It's winter time and power can be very iffy, so I hope that you'll go and at least watch the videos and learn a little bit. Just, you know, watch a 2 or 3 minute video. Find out how simple this thing is and find out how that it has literally already saved some people's lives. Sunshinesimple.com is the direct link if you're interested in getting a generator and you don't want some big, smelly, loud generator that's going to run out of fuel. It's quiet. There are no moving parts. It works in harmony with Mother Nature. Sunshinesimple.com. We're talking about amazing coincidences and synchronicities. Here is a story from 1883 about a man named Henry Zeigland. I'm not sure where this takes place, but Henry Zeigland had a girlfriend, and they got into a big fight, and he broke off the relationship with his girlfriend. And she was so distressed that she committed suicide. You can imagine what a horrible situation that was. Well, the girl's brother was so enraged that he held Henry Zeigland accountable for this suicide. So this girl's brother hunted down Henry Zeigland and shot him. The brother believed he had killed Zeigland, so he then took his own life and shot himself. As it turns out, however, Zeigland had not been killed. The bullet had only grazed his face and then lodged into a tree. It was a very narrow, you might even say, miraculous escape. Well, years later, Henry Zieglin decided to cut down that same tree, which still had the bullet in it. The tree was so huge and formidable that Zieglin decided, instead of cutting it down, to blow it up with dynamite. And when he did that, the explosion propelled the bullet into Zieglin's head and killed him. Talk about an object that was just destined to go where it was intended to be. It's kind of like, you know, that 545 room key, you might argue, it was darn determined to make it somehow into my hands. Fortunately, it wasn't a bullet destined for my head.
Oh, don't you worry. I'm sure there's one out there somewhere.
You're probably right about that, yeah. Amazing structure, amazing organization to how things seem to sort of fall into place. Here's one that's a little more recent regarding actor Anthony Hopkins. In 1973, Anthony Hopkins agreed to appear in a movie called The Girl from Petrovka. Now, that movie was based on a novel by a man named George Pfeiffer. So once Anthony Hopkins agreed to be in this movie, he wanted to read the novel. But it was kind of a rare novel in London. It wasn't widely published and distributed there. So Anthony Hopkins goes all over London looking for a copy of this book. He couldn't find it anywhere. So you can imagine how surprised he was to, out of the blue, just discover a copy lying on a bench in a train station. So Anthony Hopkins picks up this book, opens it. Guess what? It turns out to be the author's, George Pfeiffer's, own personal annotated copy, which the author had lent to a friend and which had been stolen from his friend's car. Anthony Hopkins was obviously destined to read that book before he took that role. And you know what? You probably never even heard of The Girl from Petrovka. So that may, you might think, well,
I thought it was a Cinemax late night movie.
Kind of sounds like. You might think, well, hey, what's the big deal? You know, why was it so? It wasn't like it was Silence of the Lambs. But that's the thing. From our limited human perspectives, we just can't see how every little thing somehow ends up taking you that next step, leading you toward the bigger picture. But obviously, there was something there that just made it sort of, well, let me put it this way, something that insisted on him having that book. And what's funny is that sometimes when these amazing coincidences happen, you could say that they partially happened because a person willed them. For example, Mark Ellis Bennett wanted to find those room keys, and he did. My sister saw that key, and she said, wouldn't that be cool if that was a 545 key? And it was. Anthony Hopkins was looking for this book, and lo and behold, it was that book. But in most cases, people don't seem to be thinking about willing these things to happen. I certainly wasn't out looking for a new girlfriend the day that all these variables fell into place when I met Lauren, because her mother was dating a man with the same name as my grandfather. Or I've given you all these other examples of things that have happened when the person wasn't necessarily out looking for a profound coincidence. Let me read you this one from Germany, 1914. A German mother took a picture of her infant son, and she left the film to be developed at a store in a town called Strasbourg. Well, in those days, some film plates were sold individually. Okay, so at that point, World War I broke out, and she was unable to return to Strasbourg to get the picture. So she just figured this picture is lost. 2 years later, this woman bought a film plate in Frankfurt, Germany. This is over 100 miles away, to take a picture of her newborn daughter. When she developed the film, it turned out to be a double exposure with the picture of her new daughter superimposed on the earlier picture of her son. Through some incredible twist of fate, her original film had never been developed, had been mislabeled as unused, and had eventually been resold to her.
Then it made its way to the Speaking of Strange website as a ghost photo that you had to verify or not.
One last quick. Well, that you're right, Sam. That probably would have. I got an email the other day from somebody saying, "Disprove this as a ghost photo." And I looked at it and I said, "This is from the iPhone Ghost Capture app." There you go. So one last story before we take this break here. You probably know this one. I love talking about it. The lives of Thomas Jefferson and John Adams, two of America's founders, so intertwined. Jefferson crafted the Declaration of Independence, showing drafts of it to Adams, who helped to edit and hone it. The document was approved by the Continental Congress on the 4th of July, 1776. Surprisingly, both Jefferson and Adams died on the same day, July 4th, 1826, exactly 50 years from the signing of the Declaration of Independence. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to talk about what is perhaps the most famous example of these amazing coincidences, the connections between President Abraham Lincoln and President John F. Kennedy. And there are even more coincidences between those two than you have probably even heard. I'm Joshua P. Warren. It's the program where the unusual becomes usual, brought to you by Wright's Coin Shop. You're listening to Speaking of Strange.
Waiting in the sky. He'd like to come and meet us.
And we're in the final minutes of hour number two on tonight's Speaking of Strange. Coming up next hour, well, we call it the Dark 30 Hour, and that's when we dig into some of the more outrageous and controversial material. Not for the kiddies, not for the easily offended, so you may or may not want to stick around for that. I am Joshua P. Warren. You're listening to Speaking of Strange. Here's the complete list of the Lincoln-Kennedy coincidences, okay? Both presidents were elected to the House of Representatives in 1946. Both were losing candidates for their party's vice presidential nomination in 1956. Both presidents were elected to the presidency in 1960 after a series of debates with their opponent. Lincoln defeated incumbent Vice President John Breckinridge for the presidency in 1860, and Kennedy defeated incumbent Vice President Nixon for the presidency in 1960. Both their predecessors were the last presidents to be born in their respective centuries. Both their predecessors left office in their 70s and retired to Pennsylvania. James Buchanan, whom Lincoln seceded, retired to the Lancaster Township, and Dwight D. Eisenhower, whom Kennedy seceded, retired to Gettysburg. They both then died before the end of the decade. Both their vice presidents and successors were Southern Democrats named Johnson, Andrew Johnson and Lyndon B. Johnson, who were both born in 08. Both presidents were concerned with the problems of black Americans and made their views strongly known in 1863. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation in 1862, which took effect in 1863. And in 1963, Kennedy presented his reports to Congress on civil rights, and in June of that year delivered his civil rights address on radio and TV, in which he proposed the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Both presidents and their successors conferred with a nationally known black leader about civil rights. Both Lincoln and Andrew Johnson conferred with Frederick Douglass, and both Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson conferred with Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Both presidents were known for their wit and eloquence, and both frequently quoted Shakespeare and the Bible in their speeches. Both presidents have been captains of ships in their private lives, Lincoln on a riverboat and Kennedy on PT-109. Each president suffered from a genetic disease. Lincoln had Marfan syndrome and Kennedy had Addison's disease. Both presidents were shot in the head on a Friday, seated beside their wives. Both Fridays preceded a major holiday observed within the week. Both presidents were accompanied by another couple. The male companion of the other couple was wounded by the assassin. Both presidents fathered four children and had a son die during his presidency. Both presidents' wives died in their 60s after an untimely decline in health during the administration of a president who had seen their husbands in Washington, D.C., the same year as the assassination. Lincoln was shot by John Wilkes Booth at Ford's Theater, and Kennedy was shot by Lee Harvey Oswald in a Lincoln made by Ford. Both presidents' last names have seven letters. Both assassins' full names have 15 letters. Each assassin committed his crime in a building where he was employed. Both presidents were purportedly smiling immediately before the assassination began. After shooting Lincoln, Booth ran from a theater to a warehouse, and after shooting Kennedy, Oswald ran from a warehouse to a theater. Both Johnsons were seceded as president in 1969 by Republicans whose administrations were considered failures and whose mothers were named Hannah. Both assassins died in the same month as their victim in a state adjacent to their state of birth. Both assassins were Southern white males born in the late 30s who were also in their mid-20s. Both assassins were killed before being tried. Both assassins suffered injuries during the escape. Both assassins fled using modes of transportation they did not own. Both bodyguards named William died 48 hours after being age 75. It goes on and on and on, my friends, but you know what? We're out of time. I think you can see there is a structure. There is a meaning. You apply whatever sense you want to that. I'm Joshua P. Warren. This is Speaking of Strange.